Ladies and gentlemen, you are watching Casturbis. My name is Christian Colley, and with me is the artist formerly known as Philip Bates. He's now called Billip Fates, which is useful because they sound almost the same. How are you, Billip?
Yeah, very, very well, thank you. I can't swap your first your first letters over, so that's annoying.
No,
really,
it's tragic, isn't it? Yeah. Philip, of course, is the editor of the Doctor Who Companion.com, which has been going great guns, even with no Doctor Who on air, which is useful, isn't it?
Yeah. It's it happened quite a lot with us. We started in 2016 when there was just one episode of Doctor Who, so. Great.
Good timing.
But, you know, there's still news.
Yeah. Well, there's always Doctor Who.
There's still news and stuff, but.
Well, yeah. Do you know, there was a few months in the sort of mid 90s. Oh, no, not mid 90s. Was it mid 90s? Was it after the TV movie? No, it was before the TV movie. Yeah, there was that period. So, like, early 90s when all there was like. John Pertwee advertising one-to-one with Karl McLaughlin. It was one-to-one. Mobile phone network. And it might be in Vodafone. And the odd Virgin New Adventure coming out. I think they came out every 2 months at first or something. So the Doctor Who magazine news pages were also always very, very kind of scant in them days. So you're doing great compared with that.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. It's easier to disseminate stuff, I think. So
yeah.
That's a bit better.
It is.
Easier to find news as well.
It's a lot easier, isn't it? Yeah. So we've got together because James and I are going to be looking at the war between the land and the sea over the next few weeks. We will accept your thoughts and prayers. You know, it could be brilliant. You know, I'm going into this with an open mind. So Philip and myself are going to discuss it. And because it's got some good initial reviews, but then again, lots of things get initial reviews early on. So it's really down to how the audience finds it and how... It's very... I don't know about you, but when I was running the Casturbis as a news site, it was very difficult to kind of filter through the endless PR... fluff and excitement and get to the actual bones and the truth of what was actually in front of you on screen. How does that work for you? Do you, has that kind of melted away for you?
It's not too bad. I think because we ignore a lot of what the BBC tells us anyway, because they went through a stage of, their PR was particularly bad. It was badly written. They had the wrong angles on things. So we learned just to
take the nuts and bolts,
see through it.
Yeah,
quite quickly. Yeah. And I think we try to be quite enthusiastic about things as much as possible, but also. We like to stay away from BBC bias and we'll say how things really are. Plus, you know, we've got lots of writers and we're all going to approach things differently. So I like to think that we've got enough opinions coming in that we can give a good overview of things. And back in the day, you know, couple of years ago, we were doing both reviews by a single writer and then follow-up reviews that were collective contributions from various writers. So in that, we didn't manage to do it on the latest series. I doubt we will on the spin-off, but it meant we had a nice range of voices, you know?
So, yeah, I mean, you've got a lot of writers. You've got more writers than we had, I think. So, it seems, at this stage, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were lucky in that most of the people, I think all of the people who worked on Casturbis came across to Doctor Who companion. Yeah, there was just a couple who got too busy, but even then they generally contribute a few articles each year. So yeah, I think the range of voices on our site is definitely a strength.
Yeah, definitely. And it's also, cause it adds depth as well, doesn't it? Because you're getting multiple viewpoints. And that's good, because not every Doctor Who fan agrees on every single thing. So, yeah, I think that's a good strength to have. So the war between the land and the sea kicks off in Sunday evening on BBC One. And which was a surprise for me. I thought it would be later. It's 8:30, isn't it, on BBC One and on iPlayer. I had a feeling it might be later in the evening.
And they're shoving. I think it's just because they're shoving the first two episodes out together. It seems like they want to, I don't know why, but it feels like they're rushing it out a little bit.
Is it five parts?
I mean, it's only five episodes anyway, but so we've got a double bill this weekend, double bill weekend after, and then one episode just before Christmas.
Oh, so they're trying to push it out all before Christmas. That's interesting. Right. I wasn't sure if they were doing the three.
Yeah.
The two episodes on the 7th, then one on the 14th, one on the 21st, and one on the 28th. But it's interesting.
Yeah.
So are you, how do you feel about this? Are you looking forward to it?
Outside the UK. I'm very mixed about it.
Okay.
I think it's going to be interesting. I like Kate Stewart, and she plays quite a central role, I think. I like the look of it. I like Pete McTighe, who's the co-writer. So there's lots going for it.
Yeah.
But equally, I don't think it looks particularly like a Doctor Who spin-off in a weird way. I think because we are told to accept that these aquatic beings are sea devils and they look nothing like sea devils. Now, I get why, you know, I get where they're coming from, but we did have some sea devils not that long ago on TV and they... as far as I can recall, looked pretty good. It's just you couldn't have Russell Tovey snogging that face, could you?
I'm not commenting on that. it's got a superb cast, though. It's been really well cast, and clearly the writing and the production values seem to be strong as well. As you say, Pete McTighe and Guga Mbatha-Raw, Gemma Redgrave, Ruth Madeley, Alexander Devrient, and Colin McFarlane. Is Colin McFarlane playing the same character he played last time he was in the Doctor Who world?
When he was in Torchwood, Children of Earth,
He is. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
He's been in Doctor Who a couple of times, hasn't he? General Pierce, I think it is. Mm-hmm. Last time I think he was in Doctor Who was Under the Lake before the Flood, which was probably my favourite 12th Doctor story. I thought it was brilliant.
It's good on that.
And he's very good. So,
I like.
So I think that's great that we have some. I think it's good that we've got some Torchwood tie-in, really, to reinforce that this is all one world. Yeah, I think it's nice that we've got that link, that it reinforces the whole universe. But I don't know. I don't feel like it's a particular... I'm hopefully wrong, but it doesn't feel exciting Doctor Who spin-off. It doesn't feel like it's part of the Doctor Who world at the moment. It feels like it could exist in its own space and not really impact anything.
Yeah.
Gemma Redgrave, though, has said that something happens in it to her character that she doesn't know where it's going to go. after that for her. So people have been thinking that maybe Kate dies in it. I don't think so. I think it's probably just a status quo change for her. But as it seems quite likely that Ross C. Davis won't be sticking around for long, if at all, after the Christmas 2026 episode, I'm not sure how anything's going to be impacted.
When thinking back to Tortured Children of Earth, a lot of the most interesting aspects of it were the things surrounding Peter Capaldi and the political shenanigans in there. And because this is thematically and tonally similar to Children of Earth, based on, you know, based on what we've seen so far, and obviously some of the similar casting, etc., I wonder if that might be the case with this as well.
Yes. Yeah. Very probably. Russell seems to love political drama. I think I read a quote from him saying that he wanted to come back to Doctor Who in order to do this spin-off.
Right.
So considering he's done years and years, it's the same, lots of sort of politically motivated drama recently, I think it's probably still in that wheelhouse.
I think a lot of politics is plotting,
which should
though.
Be interesting. Yes. Yep. Yeah. You're very right. it will be political. I'm not sure if people want political from Doctor Who at the moment. Is the thing, because, you know, I think people seem to be a bit fed up of that side of things. With it, rightly or wrongly, you know.
Yeah, it's another conversation. Yeah,
now's a good time for it.
Exactly.
You know, there's going to be. I did see a quote with Russell saying that every writer in the world is trying to think of ways to do a drama about global warming. So that's certainly going to be a pressing plot point, something to do with how we're disposing too much into the oceans. Second episode is called Plastic Apocalypse. So it makes me think of Praxeus, really. And obviously Pete McTighe wrote that, so it's probably going to be quite similar, I would think.
Yeah. Okay.
Can I ask you your thoughts on the spin-off as well? Because I realised that I have just done a lot of waffling and a lot.
Okay.
Ask you your thoughts.
I want to go into it with an open mind, and I'm kind of looking at it in a positive light. I'm looking at it in a positive light. I don't want to be going into it with like echoes of the last series of Doctor Who in my head. It's a separate show, basically. It's not, you know, it's not called Doctor Who, The War Between the Land and the Sea, is it? It's just called The War Between the Land and the Sea. So there's no reason to tie it necessarily into the Doctor Who world, apart from a coincidence of characters and casting. Obviously, it is in the Doctor Who world, but the Sea Devils don't really look like Sea Devils either. And equally, though, as well as going into it like that, I am aware that there are going to be some political messages and social commentary, and if it is done in the way that it's supposed to be done, in the way that people appreciate and benefit from, I feel, then that's okay. But if it's going to be something that's kind of like in my face, then that's going to irritate the hell out of me.
Yeah.
And that's going to affect how I feel about the show overall. So it's really down to the writing and the direction of how the story is told, really, whether I'll enjoy it or not. But as I say, I'm going into it with an open mind, and James and I are going to be talking about it, so.
Yeah. I think it's interesting, too, that a lot of recent-ish Doctor Who has felt like it's preaching.
Yeah.
But we don't really need to be preached at about global warming. Everybody knows what it's about. Nobody's going, oh, never heard of this climate change before. But if they show the effects on actual sea life, then that'll be... that will be a positive step, because not everybody knows the minutiae of how it is affecting our oceans.
I mean, I have a slightly unfashionable opinion about this. My opinion is that, like, it's getting warmer anyway, and there's very little we can do about it because of the size of the Earth compared with the size of the Sun. Whereas, you know, so taxing people because of that seems to be, like, really unfair to me when there are actual tangible things that we can actually do in our environments, in the immediate world around us, that we can improve. And we don't. We just pay this kind of mystical tax to the Sun, like sacrificing our tax dollars, whatever, to the Sun God, when we can literally clean, the money is there, we can literally clean our seas, our rivers and our oceans, etc. Where I live, in the northeast, we've had this, like, mass die-offs of crustaceans over the past few years, which have been more or less linked to industrial dredging, which has been done in a way that could be considered to be haphazard. It's been discovered that there are methods of dredging that don't result in huge die-offs if the right precautions are made. So something like that seems to be avoidable. And that's the sort of thing that I'm talking about, things that we can actually change to make the immediate world around us appear just to be better and healthier. So the climate change thing is very much a kind of, it's an umbrella term for things that I think maybe distracts from things that we can actually do and things that people need to be more aware of that they can do. And because of the umbrella term, they're not aware of that.
Yeah.
So
I think you're absolutely right. A lot of it is for political point scoring and things like that, and doesn't actually help, not really. No. So I think we're quite a naive society in that regard. Our local council announced that we can now start recycling soft plastics.
Okay,
great, that's really good. It's all the stuff that packages fruit or, you know, whatever. It basically, the guide was, if you scrunch it up and it unfurls, then it can go in the recycling. Okay. Except there's a bit of a scandal in brewing, let's say, because at the moment they can't actually recycle it at our refuse centre. So they've told people that we can, and we're putting out in the recycling, but they it's just having to go in the tit when gets to its final destination.
Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. Oh my God. I've heard about this before else in other parts of the country. I'm not going to name any areas.
Yeah, I'm not, but it's appalling.
A bit close to home. Okay, let's move on. As Philip says, it kicks off with two episodes on December the 7th. The following week, on December the 14th, there's another two episodes, and then it concludes on December the 21st. I am going to be discussing the war between the land and the sea with James over the next few weeks, and you'll get that first on the Patreon, just like this conversation went out first on the Patreon as well. And then we'll have a shorter version of those chats available to you through Spotify and Apple Podcasts and all those other places that you can get podcasts from. Philip, apart from scrunching up soft plastic, what have you been doing lately?
I've been working on, I've edited a book all about Sarah Jane Smith.
Yes.
Which is out the printers now, so it should be out. It should be going to going through post boxes, letter boxes, you know the term, doors, very shortly, in the next sort of week, wow. I would say.
Okay.
And we've got some pretty decent stuff in it, I think.
Yeah.
And I can say that because
I'm not in it.
Even though I wrote some chapters, I didn't write all it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I've got about 25 writers all working on it. Mm-hmm. Apart from you, because we've got quality control. So we've got some well-known people, some less well-known people. We've got, very excitingly, we've got what could be the last interview with John Pertwee as part of a chapter.
Wow.
Yeah. When one of our contributors, Anthony, when he told me that he interviewed Pertwee, it would have been... about 96, I think, very shortly before his passing. Oh, I was excited to read that.
So what was this, so a school thing or what? How did this happen?
It was for a... Anthony was creating a website of some description back then. And he contacted Pertwee's people. And was shocked when he got a message saying yes. So he talks a bit about the 90s audios, Paradise of Death and the Ghosts of N-Space, a bit about his last days on Doctor Who. And yeah, it's a fascinating interview, I think. And wow. It's interspersed with Anthony talking about the wilderness years and how they treated Sarah. So that's very exciting to have in print, I think. And we've also got Martin Geraghty and Colin Howard talking about, respectively artists for Doctor Who magazine and the Doctor Who VHS covers. They're talking about memories of Sarah and Elizabeth Sladen. Okay. We've also got Tim Treloar. So he's a voice of the Third Doctor for Big Finish. And he was a lovely chap, and he's given us a great chapter about writing the latest Big Finish, Operation Vengeance, with the Third Doctor, Sarah, and a little bit of Joe Grant. And then otherwise, we basically cover, I think, every aspect of Sarah and Elizabeth Sladen. We've got a couple of lovely chapters about her life outside of Doctor Who, what she thought of the character in general, how she progressed, and her other roles, you know, from anything from Zed Cars to Some Mothers Do Have Them.
James and I were talking about Some Mothers Do Have Them a few weeks ago, because we were contrasting Sarah Jane in the Pertwee series with the Sarah Jane with Tom Baker, and the character she played in Some Mothers Do Have Them was more like the later Sarah Jane rather than the Sarah Jane who first meets the Doctor. We thought that was quite interesting.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, she mellows a bit, doesn't she?
She does, yeah.
It's a bit more... Yeah, quite...
So...
quite fun.
There's... I mean, she did a lot... Have you got the adverts in there, then? Because she did a lot of adverts.
Did she?
Oh, yes! Oh, do you know...
They are probably mentioned.
I hope so. Yeah, I'm forever... I'm one of these people who spends a lot of time watching old adverts on YouTube.
Right.
And, yeah, I mean, I wrote an article about this for the... that website that's Hero Collector.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously that's offline now. So I've reworked that article at some point and republished it. I can't remember where. But yeah, there was, she worked on a lot of adverts. And I'm pretty sure at least one of them, if not two of them, are included in this article if I can find it. And if I haven't republished it, I will republish it so people can see it.
Oh, that'd be good, yeah. Yeah, I think that the chapters by Peter Shaw that talks about all her other roles, it mainly focuses on main TV and movie roles. But I think he does mention adverts, but I can't remember.
I've just found the article. And there's one from 1994 for BBC Good Food magazine, for example. But there's loads more before that that she was in. So it's quite interesting, the number of Doctor Who people that have been in adverts. John Pertwee as well did a few.
Didn't he do one with Peter Davison and,
Sylvester McCoy?
Was it Colin Baker for a car? Ah, yes, possibly.
Possibly
Sylvester. For a car, wasn't it?
I'm not sure if it was for a car. There might be a car. They definitely did a phone one. They launched a mobile phone service together. I don't think that was an advert. I think that was like a press call sort of thing. John Pertwee, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, John Pertwee did one for Vodafone with Carl McLaughlin. Although they're never in the same scene. And Tom Baker's done like pension sales and computers in Australia with Lala Ward many years ago. Yeah.
Yes. So, yeah.
I'll link to that article in the show notes. Yeah. It's quite an interesting. And Peter Capaldi was in a Whitbread Best Bitter advert campaign as well.
Oh, right. Okay. I'm sure David Tennant must have done quite a few.
Oh, Tennant's done loads. Oh, yeah, there was a Boots Christmas TV advert campaign. He was in a few of those in 2002.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's in a few.
Right.
Yeah, and John Barrowman advertised Iron Brew in 1998 or so.
Right, okay. Okay.
Yeah, there's loads.
Those would have been before I was a Doctor Who fan, so I wouldn't have had any recognition of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And okay. Peter Davison's done a few. And the thing is, of course, like Peter Davison and David Tennant in particular, their voices still appear on adverts as well, and that's just too many to list, really.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, squeaky chair there. So, this book's coming out now, so it's dropping in mailboxes soon, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, so we cover everything from Time Warrior to Sarah Jane Adventures. I rewatched all the Sarah Jane Adventures, and then I also watched K-9 and Company for the very first time.
Bless you.
Just to give my thoughts on it as a fresh viewer. I quite enjoyed it. I thought it was all right. General wisdom says it's a bit rubber, but...
Well, the opening titles, of course. The opening title, if you don't know what it is, the opening titles can lead you to suspect that it is about a woman who turns into a robot dog.
Yeah, that's how far I got with it. that's what happens, isn't it? Yes, it's the start is baffling. I'll give you that. It's quite catchy, the tune, but. In a sadistic sort of way.
The thing is, of course, about that is that, you know, kids' TV shows are that crazy. I mean, my little girl, my youngest, she watches a show called Miraculous about some people who can, like, change their appearance and solve crime due to some, like, Chinese jewellery. I think that's what it is. Idea... And, you know, and we know what the Japanese did with, like, various vehicles and people combining with vehicles and stuff like that. So, in reality, the concept of a lady who solves crime by turning into a robot dog isn't actually that crazy.
No, that's true. Yeah, You could write that, Christian. Make you millions.
Perhaps I will. Perhaps I will. Who knows? So what else are you working on though? Because obviously this is coming out now, but you must have a few other things in the chamber, as it were.
Yeah. I think I'm working on about 5 or 6 books for next year, I think, something like that. One I'm mostly completed. I've got about 10,000 words left to do on it, and that's we've not actually announced it yet, but it's a young adult book from the Lucy Wilson Mysteries from Candy Jar. So she is the granddaughter of the Brigadier, and Candy Jar has just celebrated 15 years. So Sean, the publisher, my publisher, he wanted something to celebrate that. Mm-hmm. So he asked me to do a pastiche, an homage to the three doctors called the Three Lucys. Okay. So that's been very fun to do. Very difficult because it's very timey-wimey and it's all about, you know, antimatter and things like that. But yeah, it's been real fun to do. And I rewatched the Three Doctors. I rewatched basically any Doctor Who with antimatter in, which isn't much, really. There's Planet of Evil, Ark of Infinity. That might be about it.
Earthshock has antimatter in it.
So I wanted to... Okay.
It's an antimatter drive that powers the freighter. So technically, there's antimatter in that. It's only a thing, but you know, it's not like there's no like antimatter based character or anything. But I just want to go to the I was aware of the Lucy Wilson Mysteries, but I didn't know there was that many of them.
Yeah, there's nearly 30 now.
Yeah, there's a lot.
I've written a short story for one of them before that was great to do. I love doing that. But it was very restrictive. You know, it was only like 5,000 words or something, whereas a general novel is about 36,000 to 40,000 because it's a young adult range. But to be honest, I've read most of them. And they don't, yes, there's enough for kids in there, but actually just as a Doctor Who fan, I think people would generally enjoy them. Mm. They don't talk down to kids or anything like that. They don't patronise. They're just good stories, really, which is what you really want.
I'm looking through the list.
I don't let that range down.
I'm sure you won't. I'm looking through the list of names. There's some big names in there. John Peel of the classic Doctor Who adaptations, and Andy Frankenmalen as well. But one of them sticks out at me, and that's Wink Taylor. Now, I can't prove this. I don't have the item to hand, but I'm pretty sure I have a birthday card from about 25 years ago-ish that features the voice artistry of Wink Taylor doing an impersonation of Eric Morecambe. Yeah.
That's very possible because did he do the one with the Bandrels?
Yeah, the Bandrel Invasion, yeah.
Yeah, so he is one of the co-writers on Sooty.
Yeah.
No, Sooty and Sweet.
Yeah, yeah.
He worked on that.
Right.
So, yes, he does voice work and things like that. So his Bandrel one is, I think it's the Billy Bandrel Show. And it's sort of like it goes behind the scenes on kids' TV, which is, really interesting.
Wow.
So it is a fun range.
Yeah.
It's a very nice range.
Yeah, it looks it. Looks it. So, well, that's great news. So, when are you expecting that to be published?
Hopefully by the spring.
Okay.
Ideally, it basically depends on how much I can do over Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, how much writing I can get done over then. But ideally, end of January, February-ish, perhaps. So, yeah, that's quite imminent. And then we've got some other, another quite big project coming up,
okay.
Hopefully, that's something of a sequel to Companions, but I can't really mention much about it yet, just in case it doesn't come through, or, you know.
That sounds interesting.
Companions was the, yeah. Companions was a massive project to do, so it won't be that big, but nonetheless, it'll probably be quite substantial.
Okay.
So, yeah, we shall see.
If you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts and everywhere else, then you need to subscribe to the podcast through Patreon to listen to the extended version of the podcast. And for you, it's the end of the show. So I want to thank Phil for joining me this week on Castabis.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming in. You are, you've got the Sarah Jane book coming out imminently, and you're working on The Three Lucys.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. Yep.
And that should be along next year. And of course, the War Between the Land and the Sea, a name, a title of a show which will one day embed itself in my brain, but so far I do need to read it every time I say it, kicks off on Sunday evening at 8:30, on Sunday the 7th of December at 8:30 on BBC One and BBC iPlayer. You've been watching Castabris. If you are one of our Patreon supporters, new feature from this week's video version of the podcast, your name will appear in the closing titles. Until next time, it's goodbye from me and goodbye from Phil.
See ya.